Chapter 8. Consider what it will be to marry a gentleman of a good family, in good circumstances, and with the consent of the whole house, and to enjoy all that the world can give you, and what, on the other hand, to be sunk into the dark circumstances of a woman that has lost her reputation. And that though I shall be a private friend to you while I live, yet as I shall be suspected always, so you will be afraid to see me, and I shall be afraid to own you. He gave me no time to reply, but went on with me thus. What has happened between us, child, so long as we both agree to do so, may be buried and forgotten. I shall always be your sincere friend, without any inclination to near intimacy, when you become my sister, and we shall have all the honest part of conversation without any reproaches between us of having done amiss. I beg of you to consider it, and to not stand in the way of your own safety and prosperity. And to satisfy you that I am sincere, added he, I here offer you number 500 in money, to make you some amends for the freedoms I have taken with you, which we shall look upon as some of the follies of our lives, which 'tis hoped we may repent of. He spoke this in so much more moving terms than it is possible for me to express, and with so much greater force of argument than I can repeat, that I only recommend it to those who read the story, to suppose that as he held me above an hour and a half in that discourse, so he answered all my objections, and fortified his discourse with all the arguments that human wit and art could devise. I cannot say, however, that anything he said made impression enough upon me so as to give me any thought of the matter, till he told me at last very plainly that if I refused, he was sorry to add that he could never go on with me in that station as we stood before, that though he loved me as well as ever, and that I was as agreeable to him as ever, yet sense of virtue had not so far forsaken him as to suffer him to lie with a woman that his brother courted to make his wife. And if he took his leave of me with a denial in this affair, whatever he might do for me in the point of support, grounded on his first engagement of maintaining me, yet he would not have me be surprised that he was obliged to tell me he could not allow himself to see me any more, and that, indeed, I could not expect it of him. I received this last part with some token of surprise and disorder, and had much ado to avoid sinking down, for indeed I loved him to an extravagance not easy to imagine, but he perceived my disorder. He entreated me to consider seriously of it, assured me that it was the only way to preserve our mutual affection, that in this station we might love as friends, with the utmost passion, and with a love of relation untainted, free from our just reproaches, and free from other people's suspicions, that he should ever acknowledge his happiness owing to me, that he would be debtor to me as long as he lived, and would be paying that debt as long as he had breath. Thus he wrought me up, in short, to a kind of hesitation in the matter, having the dangers on one side represented in lively figures, and indeed, heightened by my imagination of being turned out to the wide world a mere cast-off whore, for it was no less, and perhaps exposed as such, with little to provide for myself, with no friend, no acquaintance in the whole world, out of that town, and there I could not pretend to stay. All this terrified me to the last degree, and he took care upon all occasions to lay it home to me in the worst colors that it could be possible to be drawn in. On the other hand, he failed not to set forth the easy, prosperous life which I was going to live. He answered all that I could object from affection, and from former engagements, with telling me the necessity that was before us of taking other measures now. And as to his promises of marriage, the nature of things, he said, had put an end to that, by the probability of my being his brother's wife, before the time to which his promises all referred. Thus, in a word, I may say, he reasoned me out of my reason, he conquered all my arguments, and I began to see a danger that I was in, which I had not considered of before, and that was, of being dropped by both of them, and left alone in the world to shift for myself. This, and his persuasion, at length prevailed with me to consent, though with so much reluctance, that it was easy to see I should go to church like a bear to the stake. I had some little apprehensions about me too, lest my new spouse, who, by the way, I had not the least affection for, should be skillful enough to challenge me on another account, upon our first coming to bed together. But whether he did it with design or not, I know not, but his elder brother took care to make him very much fuddled before he went to bed, so that I had the satisfaction of a drunken bedfellow the first night. How he did it I know not, but I concluded that he certainly contrived it, that his brother might be able to make no judgment of the difference between a maid and a married woman, nor did he ever entertain any notions of it, or disturb his thoughts about it. I should go back a little here to where I left off. The elder brother having thus managed me, his next business was to manage his mother, and he never left till he had brought her to acquiesce and be passive in the thing, even without acquainting the father, other than by post letters, so that she consented to our marrying privately, and leaving her to mange the father afterwards. Then he cajoled with his brother, and persuaded him what service he had done him, and how he had brought his mother to consent, which, though true, was not indeed done to serve him, but to serve himself. But thus diligently did he cheat him, and had the thanks of a faithful friend for shifting off his whore into his brother's arms for a wife. So certainly does interest banish all manner of affection, and so naturally do men give up honor and justice, humanity, and even Christianity, to secure themselves. I must now come back to Brother Robin, as we always called him, who having got his mother's consent, as above, came big with the news to me, and told me the whole story of it, with a sincerity so visible, that I must confess it grieved me, that I must be the instrument to abuse so honest a gentleman. But there was no remedy. He would have me, and I was not obliged to tell him that I was his brother's whore, though I had no other way to put him off. So I came gradually into it, to his satisfaction, and behold, we were married. Modesty forbids me to reveal the secrets of the marriage bed, but nothing could have happened more suitable to my circumstances than that, as above, my husband was so fuddled when he came to bed that he could not remember in the morning whether he had had any conversation with me or no, and I was obliged to tell him he had, though in reality he had not, that I might be sure he could make to inquiry about anything else. It concerns the story in hand very little to enter into the further particulars of the family, or of myself, for the 5 years that I lived with this husband, only to observe that I had 2 children by him, and that at the end of 5 years he died. He had been really a very good husband to me, and we lived very agreeably together. But as he had not received much from them, and had in the little time he lived acquired no great matters, so my circumstances were not great, nor was I much mended by the match. Indeed, I had preserved the elder brother's bonds to me, to pay number 500 which he offered me for my consent to marry his brother, and this, with what I had saved of the money he formerly gave me, about as much more by my husband, left me a widow with about number 1200 in my pocket. My 2 children were, indeed, taken happily off my hands by my husband's father and mother, and that, by the way, was all they got by Mrs. Betty. I confess I was not suitably affected with the loss of my husband, nor indeed can I say that I ever loved him as I ought to have done, or as was proportionable to the good usage I had from him, for he was a tender, kind, good-humored man as any woman could desire, but his brother being so always in my sight, at least while we were in the country, was a continual snare to me, and I never was in bed with my husband, but I wished myself in the arms of his brother. And though his brother never offered me the least kindness that way after our marriage, but carried it just as a brother ought to do, yet it was impossible for me to do so to him. In short, I committed adultery and incest with him every day in my desires, which, without doubt, was as effectually criminal in the nature of the guilt as if I had actually done it. Before my husband died, his elder brother was married, and we, being then removed to London, were written to by the old lady to come and be at the wedding. My husband went, but I pretended indisposition, and that I could not possibly travel, so I stayed behind. For, in short, I could not bear the sight of his being given to another woman, though I knew I was never to have him myself. I was now, as above, left loose to the world, and being still young and handsome, as everybody said of me, and I assure you I thought myself so, and with a tolerable fortune in my pocket, I put no small value upon myself. I was courted by several very considerable tradesmen, and particularly very warmly by one, a linen draper, at whose house, after my husband's death, I took a lodging, his sister being my acquaintance. Here I had all the liberty, and all the opportunity to be gay, and appear in company, that I could desire, my landlord's sister being one of the maddest, gayest things alive, and not so much mistress of her virtue as I thought as first she had been. She brought me into a world of wild company, and even brought home several persons, such as she liked well enough to gratify, to see her pretty widow, so she was pleased to call me, and that name I got in a little time in public. Now, as fame and fools make an assembly, I was here wonderfully caressed, had abundance of admirers, and such as called themselves lovers, but I found not one fair proposal among them all. As for their common design, that I understood too well, to be drawn into any more snares of that kind. The case was altered with me. I had money in my pocket, and had nothing to say to them. I had been tricked once by that cheat called love, but the game was over. I was resolved now, to be married or nothing, and to be well married, or not at all. I loved the company, indeed, of men of mirth and wit, men of gallantry and figure, and was often entertained with such, as I was also with others. But I found by just observation, that the brightest men came upon the dullest errand, that is to say, the dullest as to what I aimed at. On the other hand, those who came with the best proposals were the dullest, and most disagreeable part of the world. I was not averse to a tradesman, but then I would have a tradesman, forsooth, that was something of a gentleman too, that when my husband had a mind to carry me to the court, or to the play, he might become a sword, and look as like a gentleman as another man, and not be one that had the mark of his apron strings upon his coat, or the mark of his hat upon his periwig, that should look as if he was set onto his sword, when his sword was put onto him, and that carried his trade in his countenance. Well, at last I found this amphibious creature, this land-water thing called a gentleman tradesman, and as a just plague upon my folly, I was catched in the very snare which, as I might say, I laid for myself. I said for myself, for I was not trepanned, I confess, but I betrayed myself. This was a draper too, for though my comrade would have brought me to a bargain with her brother, yet when it came to the point, it was, it seems, for a mistress, not a wife, and I kept true to this notion, that a woman should never be kept for a mistress, that had money to keep herself. Thus my pride, not my principle, my money, not my virtue, kept me honest. Though, as it proved, I found I had much better have been sold by my she-comrade to her brother, than have sold myself as I did to a tradesman that was rake, gentleman, shopkeeper, and beggar, altogether. But I was hurried on by my fancy to a gentleman, to ruin myself in the grossest manner that every woman did. For my new husband, coming to a lump of money at once, fell into such a profusion of expense, that all I had, and all he had before, if he had anything worth mentioning, would not have held it out above 1 year. He was very fond of me for about a quarter of a year, and what I got by that was, that I had the pleasure of seeing a great deal of my money spent upon myself, and, as I may say, had some of the spending it too. Come, my dear, apostrophe says he to me one day, shall we go, and take a turn into the country for about a week? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a, my dear, apostrophe says I, whither would you go? I care not whither, apostrophe says he, but I have a mind to look like quality for a week. We'll go to Oxford, apostrophe says he. How, says I, shall we go? I am no horsewoman, and 'tis too far for a coach. Apostrophe too far. Apostrophe apostrophe says he, no place is too far for a coach and six. If I carry you out, you shall travel like a duchess. Apostrophe apostrophe says I, my dear, 'tis a frolic, but if you have a mind to it, I don't care. Apostrophe well, the time was appointed, we had a rich coach, very good horses, a coachman, postillion, and two footmen in very good liveries, a gentleman on horseback, and a page with a feather in his hat upon another horse. The servants all called him my lord, and the innkeepers, you may be sure, did the like, and I was her honor the countess, and thus we travelled to Oxford, and a very pleasant journey we had. For, give him his due, not a beggar alive knew better how to be a lord than my husband. We saw all the rarities at Oxford, talked with two or three fellows of colleges about putting out a young nephew that was left to his lordship's care, to the university, and of their being his tutors. We diverted ourselves with bantering several other poor scholars, with hopes of being at least his lordship's chaplains and putting on a scarf. And thus having lived like quality indeed, as to expense, we went away for Northampton, and, in a word, in about 12 days ramble came home again, to the tune of about number 93 expense. Vanity is the perfection of a fop. My husband had this excellence, that he valued nothing of expense, and as his history, you may be sure, has very little weight in it. 'Tis enough to tell you that in about 2 years and a quarter he broke, and was not so happy to get over into the mint, but got into a spawning house, being arrested in an action too heavy from him to give bail to, so he sent for me to come to him. It was no surprise to me, for I had foreseen some time that all was going to wreck, and had been taking care to reserve something if I could, though it was not much, for myself. But when he sent for me, he behaved much better than I expected, and told me plainly he had played the fool, and suffered himself to be surprised, which he might have prevented, that now he foresaw he could not stand it, and therefore he would have me go home, and in the night take away everything I had in the house of any value, and secure it. And after that, he told me that, if I could get away 100, or 200 pounds in goods out of the shop, I should do it. Only, apostrophe says he, let me know nothing of it, neither what you take nor whither you carry it. For as for me, apostrophe says he, I am resolved to get out of this house and be gone. And if you never hear of me more, my dear, apostrophe says he, I wish you well. I am only sorry for the injury I have done you. Apostrophe he said some very handsome things to me indeed at parting, for I told you he was a gentleman, and that was all the benefit I had of his being so, that he used me very handsomely, and with good manners upon all occasions, even to the last, only spent all I had, and left me to rob the creditors for something to subsist on. However, I did as he bade me, that you may be sure, and having thus taken my leave of him, I never saw him more, for Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.